Now we're still dealing with the life of David. He is on the run. They've had the test that Jonathan did with Saul as a personal favor, and he finds that finds out what David already knew, that Saul was trying to kill David. And so with Jonathan's blessing, they have parted. This was the second to last time that David will ever see Jonathan. There's one other time that's going to happen later on, very briefly. David is on the run. Now, remember, if David has got a head start, Saul can't telephone down to Bethlehem and tell the garrison that's down there to apprehend him. Communication is by word of mouth. You have to send a courier, and if David's got a half a day or day head start, that's a plus. When David fled, he fled on a Friday, and he arrives at our next location, Nob, on Friday night. Now, what is Saturday? Saturday is the Sabbath, and so everybody has to stay put where they are on the Sabbath. They can't travel any distance on the Sabbath. So David is there where in the village of Nob, to the south. David is heading south, where he was Gibeah, where Saul's hometown, was. That's where Saul's headquarters was, his house, his palace. Later on, they moved it to, east of the Jordan to a place called Mahanaim so that they would be protected from, the Philistines. But at the time, it was in Gibeah, which is about 6-7 miles north of Jerusalem. David is on his way south. The location of Nob is not sure, not certain. I have written down here the latest information is that it's approximately 2 miles north of Jerusalem. And so David has traveled from morning until evening, arriving at Nob, close to Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem at this time is not the capital of Israel. It is a Jebusite city. Still, it doesn't become the capital of Israel until after David becomes king of the United Kingdom. So the tabernacle, the Mosaic tabernacle, was there at Nob. It had moved around a number of places. When the children of Israel first came into the land under Joshua, it was at Gilgal. It was at Gilgal for quite some time. It then moved to Shiloh, which is where it was when Samuel was the little guy. Remember when we start our book of 1 Samuel? It was at Shiloh for a long time. And then remember, you had the Philistines come, and the Philistines took the ark, and evidently they sacked that region. And the tabernacle, we don't know exactly sure when, but it moved to Nob. Nob was evidently just a small little village that was principally the place where the tabernacle was. It wasn't of any consequence otherwise. And not sure why it was there at Nob, but David is on his way south, and he stops at this place. It says in verse 1 of 1 Samuel 21, "Then came David to Nob to Ahimelech, who was the high priest." He would be the, I believe, the grandson, or great-grandson, I think it's the grandson, of Eli, who was the gentleman who took care of Samuel when he was a little guy. It says, "And Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David." Because remember, David is fourth in the kingdom. David is a commanding general in the military. He's under Abner as far as the military is concerned, but he's a high-ranking official. And here David shows up by himself. And perhaps slightly disheveled. Remember, he hasn't been home. He camped out in the field the night before, and he's been on the lam, on the run, and so he perhaps is, and you know, remember the night before, several days before, his wife had let him out through a window. Where has he been ever since then? Living out in the woods or in the field somewhere. So here comes David, and he recognizes him. Oh, this is David. This is the son-in-law of the king. This is David who has slain his 10,000s, and this is the great hero of Israel. And oh my, what is he doesn't quite look the part right now. And so he's afraid of the meeting of David. And the first question is, why are you alone and no man with you? This is most irregular. Something unusual going on. Why are you here? Now, David is who can he trust? He knows he can trust Jonathan. At this time, his wife has, you know, seems to be some great affection there. She's the one that helped him escape the first time. So he has help from his wife. He's got help from Jonathan. Is there anybody else? Probably his family down in Bethlehem, but he's not there yet. He's alone, as far as we can tell. There's some mention, Christ mentions something in the Gospels that would indicate that David had a few people with him that did not come into Nob. So when David shows up, he's by himself, but he had some people that were, a few people that were with him. At least that seems to be the indication. Or at least, joined him shortly after he left Nob. And, so why are you here? And, David tells a lie. This is the first we find ill of David in the record. And David said to Ahimelech the priest, "The king hath commanded me a business. I'm on a secret mission. And hath said unto me, let no man know anything of the business whereabout I send thee and what I have commanded thee. And I have appointed my servants to such and such a place." You're supposed to rendezvous a secret destination and so on. So I'm on a secret mission. But he says in verse 3, "Now therefore is... what is under thine hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread in my hand, or what is present." Came without, I was in a hurry, and I'm hungry, and could you give me some food? And the priest answered David and said, "There is no common bread here, but the challah bread, the show bread. If the young men, those who presumably have been traveling with David, or that David will be meeting up with, have kept themselves at least from women." And David answered the priest and said, "Yes, this is fine." And so he gives him the old showbread. Remember, he's arriving, he's there on the Sabbath. And that would be the day that they took, remember, in the tabernacle he had the table with the 12 loaves of the bread, which represented providence of God as far as, the provision of God. And so they would leave it there for 12 days, and then they'd bring in on the Sabbath, they'd put hot, fresh loaves there, and the priests normally would be the ones who would eat the old bread. But he gives David some of that bread, which is one of the things that Christ uses as an illustration that man was not made for the Sabbath, but the Sabbath for man. So he gets the bread. So he's got his provision there. And then we get a weird question. Now, by the way, it says in verse 7, this is going to come into play very importantly in chapter 22. Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord. Why was he detained? It's the Sabbath. He can't travel. He happened to be there. This guy's name is Doeg, the Edomite, the chief of the herdsmen that belonged to Saul. He's one of the servants of Saul. He's an Edomite. He's not a Jew. He's of the descendants of Esau, which is, their region is southeast of the Dead Sea. And so this guy happens to be there, and he sees David. And he's stuck there because it's the Sabbath. Can't travel on the Sabbath. So Saul has an informant, a future informant, there and sees and what's going on. Doesn't say anything. He's just keeping his eyes peeled, watching what's going on. Now, here's the weird question, verse 8. "And David said unto Ahimelech, is there not here under thine hand a spear or sword? For I have neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste." So he tells a lie, but he's asking for a sword. "Do you have any weapons here?" This is kind of like calling for the plumber. The plumber shows up and he says, "By the way, could I borrow a wrench?" David is a military guy. He's supposed to come equipped. He's supposed to be ready. And he takes off without the sword. Now you can imagine the priest. He's looking at this thing and he's going, "This is strange." David shows up a little disheveled. He's by himself. He needs provisions. He doesn't have any weapons. This is very, very, very odd. This is very strange. But it's David. I may have questions, but he's telling me he's on a secret message from the king, and therefore, a secret mission from the king, and therefore, I'm not at liberty to ask. Because he can't tell me because it's a secret. So even though it looks very suspicious and unusual to me, who am I? He asked for bread, I give him bread. He asked for a weapon, and the priest said in verse 9, the sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom thou slewest in the valley of Elah, probably 10 years before. Behold, it is here, wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If thou wilt take it, for there is no other than that. Say, and so that's the only weapon here. You got a museum piece here that is here to honor God for the victory that he gave over Goliath. So that sword is here. And David's like, I'll take that one. Now we think that, now remember, Goliath was pushing 9 feet in height.
That sword is probably as big as David.
Now, I would suppose that Goliath's sword would be big. But I'm not figuring that, don't be thinking that we are used to, because we see it in the movies. We are used to thinking of, and you've got this 3.5 foot long blade. Or maybe 4 feet long. Great big huge long thing that if it's in the scabbard, you have to wear it, not where your belt is, but up higher, because otherwise the end will be touching on the ground, you know. And it's got this big long thing. We're thinking cavalry sword or the stuff we see in the movies. Most swords used in ancient military were about this long. Why? Because you don't fight like this. That's dramatic. It's stupid. Because when you do this, the guy in front of you has got an open target. And when you do that, you're also an open target. And this thing is big and heavy. And you can't... you know, when I was a kid, we had... my father used tools that were made in the previous century. I know how to use one of these kinds of saws. Because that's what my dad... don't fire up the chainsaw. That burns gas. Go use this. And we had a couple of big axes, even a couple of big double-bladed logger's axes around the place, and we had to use that if we were going to be taking down a tree or something like that. And so we'd sharpen it up, and you had this stupid axe that might weigh like 8 or 10 pounds, you know. And when you're swinging that puppy, there's no stopping it once you get the thing moving, you know. And you can imagine a sword that might weigh, we're visioning, 8, 10, 12, 15 pounds. Okay, that is not what they used. They used something short because they had their shield here and they held the sword here and they thrust like this. And the Romans did the same thing. That way you were always guarded and you always had your weapon ready. Like that. And you wanted it short because otherwise it gets entangled and everything else. You want it short enough so it can reach, but you don't want it too long because then it becomes cumbersome to use. So Goliath's sword, even if you got a giant-sized sword for the guy, it might be 3 feet long. So don't be thinking of something that, is that a sword or a spear? You know, it's going to be a decent-sized piece, but don't be thinking, you know, great big huge thing like that. The Romans and some of the ancients did have great big huge things. They were primarily ceremonial, or they were used for executions, or that kind of thing, but they are not used in battle. So he gets Goliath's sword. And by the way, one of the perks of Goliath's sword, this is for your history, this is the time in history where you're transitioning from the Bronze Age to the Iron Age. The Jews, the Israelites, had bronze. The Philistines had iron, which is one of the reasons why the Philistines, which were a smaller kingdom numerically than the Jews, were often beating them in battle. Because if you've got bronze weapons, they're going to break under the onslaught of the iron. And so David has got an iron sword, which is like, I got the best of the best here. And because the Philistines had better weapons, at least at this point. So he gets the sword, and he gets the bread, and he tells Ahimelech a bunch of lame stories and lies to get they are geared in such a way, because David's had many miles, many hours to think over what he's going to say when he gets there. And So David takes the stuff. And next morning, after the Sabbath, verse 10, David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. Where does he go? He goes to Philistine territory and he goes to Gath. You gotta figure, David's not thinking straight because there's a perk. Saul's not gonna be able to follow him there. But out of all places to go, why would you go to the hometown of Goliath? This just does not make sense. This is not a brainy move, because, and we're going to find this out, because David is going to end up having to flee, but we've got to call it quits here, because we're out of time.
Couldn't it be because he knows Saul will go there looking for him?
Yes, that's the perk. But he's also going into danger because, and we're going to find this out here in this next paragraph. The title of this next one, he's going for refuge into the mouth of the lion. He's bearing Goliath's sword. I mean, come on. You know, then there's bound to be somebody there who's going to recognize it.
Someone made it for him.
Yeah. I mean, Goliath was their hero, and here you've got this oversized sword that David is bearing, and David's the one that bumped off our hero, and here David comes through the gates. Now, he's by himself, he's not an invader, but everybody's like, because it says, let's go ahead and read it anyway, we'll discuss it a little bit more next time. And the servants of Achish, who is the king, said unto him, is this not David the king of the land? Because he's the one, practically speaking, who's doing all the work. Did they not sing to one another of him in their dances, saying, Saul hath slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? And says, and David laid these words up in his heart and was sore afraid. He says, I'm in trouble. This was not a smart move. I need to be someplace else. But I'm here.
He's probably pretty tired.
Well, but he's probably been in Gath for a day or two before this all comes down. Maybe even longer than that. And it says in verse 13, he changed his behavior before them and feigned himself mad in their hands and scrabbled on the doors of the gate and let his drool run down on his beard. And then Achish said unto his servants, lo, you see the man is mad. Wherefore did you bring him to me? Have I need now of madmen that ye have brought this fellow to play the madman before my presence? This shell is not going to come into my house. Get rid of this guy. I don't need any screwballs around here. You guys are screwy for bringing him in here. And so David's able to escape. By the way, there's a number of accounts in history where people pulled that same routine with success. You know, pretending they're out of their gourd. And it works. We have a number of people today that pull that, trying to get off of murder charges and other things in the courts. All right, let's close in prayer. Father, we thank you for today. Thank you for your guidance of your people in spite of their sin. And Father, in spite of David's folly, you still have a plan and purpose for him. Father, you are a gracious God. And Father, thank you so often for doing the same sort of thing in our lives, where we make foolish decisions, where we pursue a course that is very pragmatic. We are pursuing it because we think it's in our best interest. But Father, in so often doing that, we do things that are wrong, and I pray that we would always do what is right. Father, you will bring it to pass, and may we not always count on you of delivering us from our own foolishness. Father, you often do that, but sometimes we suffer the consequences. Very often we suffer the consequences of our own foolishness. And Father, David is going to be doing that off and on during the time of his flight from Saul. And Father, may we glean lessons from this. We pray for Christ's sake. Amen.